going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
It's still special to people.
Right.
So take that back.
So why does Tommy always say no to all your ticket offers?
Because he's as jaded as anybody. That's why. Let's go to Mario and Howell. How are you, Mario?
What's up, Mario?
Hey, happy NFL Draft Eve, boys. How are you guys?
Appreciate you. Doing well.
Listen. As a Jets fan, I have to tell you, I really, really love what Aaron Glenn is doing right now. And I'm not sure if you guys picked up on the tweet that Brian Costello put out there last night, how the Jets moved away from Dave Zott, who was their director of player development since 2008. So he held the position for 17 years. Now, I'm sure he's a great guy, but I think, you know, when you think about organizations and who are able to develop players and develop talent, you know, the Jets don't come to mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, additionally, you know, I know Woody always gets criticized for, like, meddling. I think at times Woody hasn't meddled enough, because another point is Rex Hogan. Rex Hogan was on Mike Maccagnan's staff from 2015 to 2017. He spearheaded the 2016 draft when we drafted Darren Lee and Christian Hackenberg. Oh, wow. And By the way, Tiki, Christian Hackenberg was a bust.
Yeah, he was.
Last week.
never played.
But he's a bust then.
He didn't bust as a player.
Yeah, so.
He just never played.
For those that are not aware, Tiki and I had a random argument in which I called Christian Hackenberg a bust, and Tiki said, well, he can't be a bust. He never played.
Yes.
And I said, but he was so bad, he's so busted, he didn't play.
Or it was just a bad coaching situation.
Or that. It was probably all of the above. So it was one of our best nonsensical arguments. Is he a bust or is he not a bust?
Doesn't matter. He never played.
Yeah. So I read that story, too, from the great Brian Costello, that Dave Zott, S-Z-O-T-T, who was the director of player department, director of player development, was let go. And it is amazing to think he'd been there since 08, because not that he had one job for so long. He had one job through so many different administrations.
Yeah.
And the way I view organizations, tell me if I'm dead wrong about this, and I'll use David Stearns as an example too, since we've seen such great results from the Met Pitching Lab, is a new person takes over. They evaluate the organization, and there are going to be some people who are already there who they're going to say, oh, I want to keep that person. And then there are going to be some where you're like, you know what? Nothing personal. Mm-hmm. Just doesn't fit. We're going to move in a different direction. So what Dave Zott being there since 08 tells me, and maybe I'm being naive for saying this, is that every new administration, whether it was Mike Tannenbaum, John Idzik, Mike Maccagnan, Joe Douglas, they all saw a value in him. And I want to give you one quick example on a guy who's lived through a million different regime changes, and right now he may be the most popular man in New York.
Who?
And the person I'm talking about is Jeremy Hefner.
Oh, no doubt.
Jeremy Hefner, the pitching coach of the New York Mets, the pitching lab, it's great, it's amazing.
It's a great example.
Teak, he's gone through how many different managers and GMs?
Well, the question is, then why all of a sudden is he becoming the toast of the town?
Because he's got the tools.
But why hadn't he always had the tools?
Because the Wilpons own the team. And because, actually, can you double check that, Sean? What year did Jeremy Hefner join the organization as their pitching coach? Now, remember, Jeremy pitched for the Mets. Yeah. I remember him pitching well for the Mets for a little bit of time. And then eventually joined the organization, worked his way up, became the pitching coach. But I do want to be correct on that statement, because obviously Steve took over in 21. But then, even though Steve Cohen's dropping money into the organization, he needs to find out who am I giving the money to and for what.
Yeah, and he also started talking heavily about the pitching lab.
Right.
Right. It became like the clutch phrase for developing pitchers, and it's why you went and got some of these veterans and you could, you know, I don't know, get the most out of them and develop the young guys at the same time. And I would assume that Hef was a big part of that.
Yeah, so he took over in 2020, which means the Wilpons,
right?
Brody Van Wagenen, here's a new owner. The new owner immediately fired Brody Van Wagenen. Sandy Alderson comes in, and they kept him. And then they kept him through different administrations. And so I just assume if a guy's surviving so many different administrations, there must be something really impressive about that guy.
Right. No, there has to be, because we've seen it, the success with the Mets rotation. Now, look, the bullpen suffered at the beginning of last season, but eventually they settled and figured it out. And this year, the bullpen and the starting rotation are out of control. Good, that is. So you got to give him credit where credit
now,
is due. And he fixed it, guys.
Yes, so
Sevy
far.
Sevy being one. Obviously, Kodai Senga's having a great start to this season as well after coming back from an injury. So he's done his job to an umpteenth degree.
Now, one thing it's very important to do, because the Mets and the Phillies are playing a game in which they're tied. And I don't know how the game's going to end. Mets could win. Mets could lose. I have no idea. We do need to enjoy something before there's a result in this Met-Philly game. Last night, when the Mets beat the Phillies, one go-to thing that a lot of baseball fans do is they watch the Philadelphia Phillies postgame show because they freak out. They go crazy. Like, they overreact. They're nuts. They cry. They whine. I mean, it is bitch-fest TV. So after last night's Met victory, second straight in the series, obviously they beat him in four in the divisional series. Mm-hmm. Remember that. Here is the beginning of the Philadelphia Phillies postgame show.
Just to make sure, there is no rivalry between the Phillies and the New York Mets. Not when you've lost 8 of your last 10, including the playoffs. Not when you are 6-19 in your last 25 games. The Mets are the bullies. Not the Phillies. The Mets are the bullies that have taken the Phillies' lunch money again and again. They've lost this series now, 4-3-1 in series on the season.
So, wow. Even if the Phillies win this game, which they may, that clip still applies because the Mets won this series and they are the bullies and they're taking lunch money and all that kind of stuff. So to hear the Philly postgame show say that, yeah. Oh, yeah. I drank those tears.
Do they hate their own team? It sounds like it.
I'm so glad you said that. So I was saying this to Tommy before the show. Remember how last year, right around this time, we all took an afternoon show road trip down to Philly for Knicks Sixers?
Oh, yes, I do remember this.
And a part of why...
Quite well.
It was fun.
FOMO Cheeks.
FOMO Cheeks tried to pick a fight with Tiki Barber, the real Tiki Barber. Not bad, Tiki.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what motivated us to go down there was there were so many tickets available.
Yes.
And so it started with, hey, Tommy, me and you were going to go. And then you're like, hey, I'll come too. So you and Sean ended up in a suite. Me and Tommy, of course, ended up, what'd they call that section?
The Ben Revere Plaza or something like
the
that.
The Revolutionary Row.
Got it.
You were not even close. But I tried.
Totally close.
And so while going there, we were kind of discussing, like, why was it so easy to go there? What's the vibe in Philly? And the answer was they hate the Sixers. They hate the team. The team had been around for a while. They kept getting knocked out in the second round. Joel Embiid is stiff.
Very, very over the process.
They're over the process. And the city turned on the team and liked the team. I believe Philadelphia has turned on the Phillies. And I know the exact moment it happened. Do you want me to tell you the exact moment?
Tell me.
When Francisco Lindor hit that grand slam against Carlos Estevez. Because last year they loved that team. I was in the building for game two. They are vicious, loving their own team, wanting to kill us kind of fans. And so it wasn't even during the series. It was as it was ending. I saw death in the eyes of, what's that guy who works with Eskin in Philadelphia? The tiny guy? What's his name?
That would be Jack.
Jack.
Fritz.
Jack Fritz. I don't know Jack Fritz.
Mm-hmm. Jack, not a fan of positive Tommy.
No, he don't like you?
No.
Okay, so you want me to rip him then?
Yes.
I was going to say nice things about him, but I'll kill him.
I'm just giving you the facts.
Let me tell you about that little dip crap, Jack Fritz. I'm just kidding. No, I do. I liked him in this regard, and I'm using him as an example for this. Jack Fitz, who I don't know from a hole in the wall, is a Philly fan.
Well, you certainly don't, because you keep saying his name wrong. It is Jack Fritz.
Fritz, okay. Fritz. I'm sorry.
F-R-I-T-Z.
Nice fellow. We've met him a few times.
Very nice fellow. And so we ended up standing next to Jack Fritz at the end of that game. And unlike Spike and his partner, who's his partner again?
That would be Ike Reese.
Ike Reese. Yeah. I think, with all due respect, I don't think Spike and Ike Reese gave a rat's ass about Phillies Mets. I think they're doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing it. They do a great job, by the way, down there. They didn't actually care.
Right.
I can tell people who care, because I care. Jack Fritz cares.
Oh, yeah.
Fritz cares, and I respect him for
he
that.
He wears it on his sleeves.
Yes. He is, I don't know if he'll take this as an insult, he's Philadelphia's me. We live it. We live it. We breathe it. It ain't just a job. It's a life. Okay?
Right.
When Francisco Lindor hit that grand slam, I saw the death of a franchise in his eyes. I looked over, and I saw it. And he represented Philadelphia. They hate the Phillies. Mm. They hate all of them. They hate Castellanos. They hate Schwarber. They hate Harper. They hate
they
Turner.
Don't hate him. I think,
bro.
I think at this point they just think it's never going to happen. It's been a lot of years.
Well, that's a part of it.
With the Phillies being constituted championship viable, and it's just not happening.
They don't, and that's part of it. They
and
don't,
then now you have the Mets come pass you.
Yes. Yeah. Kind of like
that's
what,
the, that's what happened.
Kind of like what the Knicks did last year.
Yes.
So I think that they hate the franchise. Like, I think the city of Philadelphia has turned so much, and what makes it easier for them is that they have the Eagles.
Mm.
Like, I'm not going to disrespect them. We would be lying if we did. The Eagles are freaking awesome.
Right. They're one of the best teams in football, and they have been for the last 4 years.
They could be a dynasty on the way.
Yep.
But the Philadelphia Phillies are now hated by that city.
Yeah, I think the consensus is they missed their window and championship opportunity,
that's
like
exactly
the WWE
right.
likes to say. So now they'll turn on them, which, by the way, most towns do.
No, I agree.
I mean, so.
We could do it in a few years, too, by the way. Like, I'm not above this. We're not above this. This could be us. I hope it's not. I hope we win. I hope we win a championship, and there's never that need to turn. But, yeah, the city of Philadelphia hates them. And so I will never forget Game 4 against the Phillies. Because I got to see death in another man's eyes. I saw the death of a city.
Mm.
And that's kind of cool.
Nice. Feel good?
I feel pretty good.
Oh, that was very satisfying. Yeah. You're to be there with them.
Yeah, I do feel good. I think people are aware of what happened, but my perspective on why it happened, I think, is a little bit different. So on Thursday, we all went to the Met game. And Juan Soto did not play very well, and there was kind of mixed signals from us on if he got booed or not. I was in the building. I didn't think he got booed. Tiki was eventually in the building. He didn't think he got booed.
Nope.
But Howie Rose on the radio broadcast said, wow, they're booing Juan Soto. So it wasn't a full-throttled boo, but we heard murmurs. On Friday, there were boos.
Yes.
I was in the building, and I heard it. And I even heard a murmur back from fans that were not happy with their fellow Met fan for booing. So after Juan Soto grounded out in the first inning, it was a small boo. When he grounded out in the third, I heard it very, very clear. I'm not sure how that came across on TV or how it came across the radio, but there were loud boos. But I noticed something fascinating over the next two innings. There was a buzz in the ballpark from Met fans angry at their fellow Met fans for booing. And so what happened next was completely organic. It was not because someone talked about it on talk radio, whether it was us or anyone else. It was not because of a Twitter thing. It was literally an organic decision from Met fans at Citi Field. And that's why I thought it was so unique. When Juan Soto came up in the fifth inning, he received a standing ovation.
Uh-huh. Oh, the We Love Soto!
Now, giving a standing
ovation... of course he did.
What do you mean, of course he did? Why, did you expect that?
No, because that's just the Met fan combating the stupid Met fan that's booing him.
Yes.
That's what they should do.
Yes.
So, good for him.
Oh, no.
Good for them, I mean, and good for Juan Soto.
I agree that that's exactly what happened, and I'm not sure if this story has been framed correctly. Mm. So, I agree. That's exactly what happened, but I am surprised because I don't think I've ever seen it before. Like, we saw Lindor getting a standing ovation last year in the midst of his struggles.
Yeah.
But it was kind of this
groundswell of emotion on social media and talk radio and, hey, this is what we should do. Right. It worked in Philly. We'll try it here. This was not pre-planned. I think it was a reaction.
Right. I think it's more of what we were talking about a week ago or last week, Evan, because people were going to boo. I mean, it was so minor when we were there. It had to be the vocal minority that
right.
we talked about.
Yes.
It's not the majority of the Mets fans saying, oh, you suck, Juan Soto. This is the worst decision. It's not that at all. It's disgruntled, probably kids saying, you're overpaid. We're going to boo you. And so the Met faithful did the right thing by drowning them out.
They did.
Like the majority overran the minority that want to boo because it's, I don't know, hip to boo your guy.
I don't know. I haven't figured out enough on if it's a generational thing like you're describing. It's the young Met fan. I'm still not sure.
It's not long enough to be the seasoned Met fan. It's just not long enough.
I don't know. The seasoned Met fan booed Mike Piazza. So do I trust
after
them?
After 22 games?
Yes. It was early.
Oh, man. Really?
I don't know if it was 22 games, but it was early, man.
We're talking 22 games.
They acquired him in May. He was being booed in July. So what was it, a month and a half later?
Yeah, but that's...
I heard it, bro.
Okay, but that's a midseason acquisition. That's different.
Oh, here we go. Let's explain it away.
It was
bad.
But it is. When you bring a guy in midseason, you're supposed to be great and help immediately.
No, I get that.
When it's a 15-year deal, have some patience,
no,
people.
I agree. And so when we talked about booing Juan Soto, I didn't want to do it. I'm not a booer to begin with, but I also thought it was absurd to boo a great player this early on.
Agreed.
So on Sunday, Juan Soto was asked about all this because for whatever reason, the standing ovation he got before the fifth inning opened up Juan Soto. He got on base in 7 of his next 10 plate appearances. He had a couple of big hits, including the kind of the capper to yesterday afternoon's game with that double up the alley in left center field.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's a coincidence. I know Tiki doesn't believe in coincidences.
Nope.
I'm not sure if it was just a coincidence, like he's working on things and it all clicked on Friday night, or if somehow the crowd backing him up got him going. But here's what Juan Soto had to say. And Met fans, we need to listen to this man carefully. Because he signed a 15-year contract, he's making a ton of money, he doesn't fully know us yet. Juan Soto was asked about the reaction he got Friday night, the standing ovation he received as he came up for that at-bat in the fifth inning.
It's a great feeling. It's a great feeling, you know, when you have a fan base supporting you when you're doing bad, when you're doing good, it's just great. I mean, I really appreciate what they did. I feel like they don't know how meaningful is that. I think it means a lot for the players when they do that, and it feels really special.
Hold on a second. Do we have to start thinking about this?
Yeah.
Juan basically said it. You guys don't even realize what kind of difference it makes.
Yeah.
That makes a difference.
He basically told you, don't boo us.
I think he said it.
Just cheer us.
Yeah.
Well, think about it. When we're sitting in traffic, what do we normally do? Honk the horn. Has ever in the history of New York, the tri-state area, somebody honking their horn actually made the traffic less bad?
No.
No, we do it out of frustration.
Right.
So we are booing out of frustration. That's all it is. Mm. It's a rational behavior because we're frustrated with living around here, whatever the case may be, our own lives. This guy's getting paid more money than I am. This sucks. So it's like honking a horn in traffic. Stop doing it. It doesn't fix anything. And if anything, if you're doing a job, you're putting pressure on yourself. What if some, you know, schmo booing you? It's not going to help.
So you're 100% right, because you framed why we boo, I think, correctly.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people get it wrong. You said we boo because we're frustrated. 1,000% agree with you. Some actually claim they boo to get the guy going. That's ridiculous.
No, you cheer to get a guy going.
Right.
You don't boo to get a guy going.
Right.
And you don't honk because the only reason you should honk is if someone's not paying attention.
Right.
That's the only time I honk. To avoid an accident.
That's why you should honk.
Yeah, but not really, because that forces a shock move.
Fair enough.
And it actually causes an accident.
Right.
The only reason you honk is when someone is on their phone sitting at a traffic light that's turned 40 seconds ago.
40 seconds?
Whatever, you know what I mean. It's more like 8 seconds, but they're just, you know, they're looking at their phone. You can see the back of their head looking down and not watching the light turn green, and you got places to be. I got daughters to pick up from cheers.
Damn it. What's your cutoff time? I give it a good 5 seconds before I hit that horn.
I'm about that too.
Yeah.
I actually will count.
Yeah.
If it turns, I'll go 1, 2, 3.
Not only do I count, I actually scream at them to go before I hit the horn as if they could actually hear me screaming it. But I think you're right. Like, it's a frustration reaction. You're not doing it to inspire anybody. But that answer, we have to listen. I'm not saying we have to listen. I'm saying we have to listen. You know what I mean? Listening sometimes is just hearing what someone says. Listening is following their orders. I'm not telling you to follow his orders. I'm saying let's listen to him. He just said, whether you believe him or not, hey, these fans, you guys don't even know what kind of difference it makes when you're struggling. It does make a difference. That's from Juan Soto. He's got no reason to say it other than if he actually believes it.
But a former athlete question for Tiki. As a coach, don't you treat each player differently? Like some players respond better to being yelled at. Some players respond better to being left alone. So maybe we as fans should be like coaches. Some player needs to hear a boo. Some player needs an ovation. Some player needs indifference.
The challenge for the fan base, though, is figuring that out. Like who will respond to boos and be like, all right, well, screw you. Screw you. Right? Or who will be like, I needed that love. Thank you.
Right.
Smash. Right, it's just different.
Well,
and unless you're intimately or they've been here for a while, it's hard to really know.
And in the case of Juan Soto, if you were a booer there Friday night, you could walk around saying, yeah, my booing got him going. Because look what happened to his next at bat.
Right.
And if you're a cheerer, a standing ovation-er, and I have to admit, I didn't stand. I cheered him. Mm. He was coming up to the plate. I clapped for him. But when I saw
him, they always clap when he comes up to the plate.
I agree. Absolutely. And that's what I was doing. I was being a normal Met fan by being like, yeah. I didn't stand up. Also, because it's kind of difficult to stand up sometimes.
Especially when you have a scorebook sitting
there. Yeah, I got the book. I think I was eating at the time. Oh, it was just too much to stand up. Now, Juan Soto, one more question for you, since it's very important we actually listen to this man. Were you surprised? Like, were you surprised that Met fans went out and gave you a standing ovation in the midst of your struggle?
100%. I was like, after my first at bat, I was like, why are they getting up and cheering? Like, that's kind of exciting, and I really enjoy it.
Wow. Boy, that answer's got to make you think. That answer's got to make you think that, wow, we have to give this guy a standing ovation every time up. I'm thinking about it.
You can't do that.
Because here's the bottom line. I just explained why I didn't stand up, more of a laziness thing. I listen to what Juan Soto said. There's a reason why we play these clips. Listen, he told you, play that one more time. Hey, Juan, it's a second clip. Juan, were you surprised? Listen to the giggle in his voice. Juan, were you surprised they gave you a standing ovation in the middle of your struggle?
100%. I was like, after my first at bat, I was like, why are they getting up and cheering? Like, that's kind of exciting, and I really enjoy it.
Dude, we're in love now. I think that things were touch and go at first. Like, Sean was having fun with it. He doesn't love you. He regrets it. That giggle, I think he's in love.
Oh, the We Love Soto.
And he found a fan base he can walk all over. I love it.
Walk all over?
What do you mean by that?
I can do it. It doesn't matter if I'm into something going to cheer me, and I'm going to tell him that's what gets me going.
No, but wait a second. He's saying that's what got him going. So why should we not oblige?
Because he's making $800 million.
What does that have to do?
Please cheer me when I'm struggling. This is great. This is what got me going.
Sean, you just heard the clip. I played it twice.
Yeah.
Did he ever say that?
Physically, no. Did he say it without saying it? Is that what he's insinuating? Yeah, he loved that he got cheered. He loved that the Met fans adored him.
He was surprised. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He admitted the surprise and said it was great.
And it was a good feeling for him.
And here's the best
and
part.
And you're saying do this every time going forward?
You know why? He got on base 7 of 10 times after it happened. Do I care about my team winning?
I'm sure that'll equate. Those two things will go the rest of the way.
Tiki always says, I don't believe in coincidences.
Yep.
So I'll ask you, was it all a coincidence?
It was not. Not in that case. He felt it. He believed it. And it got him more focused.
So why are you mocking us?
Did he squat at all in that at bat?
Did he squat? Oh, you mean the shuffle?
Did he shuffle?
I didn't notice a shuffle yet. I got to keep an eye on that.
I haven't seen in many of them.
He hasn't had a lot of them.
No.
He hasn't.
That tells you he's not feeling it right now.
Well, Juan Soto had another controversy, which I unfortunately got involved in. After Lindor hit the walk-off home run on Friday.
Oh, stop.
What?
Stop. This is not a controversy, and I reject this out of hand.
Okay. All I'm saying is, after he hit the home run.
Yes, explain for people who didn't see this.
Francisco Lindor hit a walk-off home run on Friday.
No. He smashed a walk-off home run.
Oh, I didn't describe it well enough.
No, because that's just like, oh, just barely got over the fence. That thing was 18 rows back in the second deck.
Lindor absolutely crushed a baseball.
Better.
To walk off the St. Louis Cardinals on Friday after Wascar Brazoban had given up the lead in the top of the ninth inning.
Good pronunciation.
Thank you very much.
Wascar Brazoban.
That's right. He hits the home run, and I'm excited. I'm all pumped up. That's it. I then get notified by multiple Met fans. I didn't see Juan Soto during the celebration. Mm-hmm. So I start looking for him. I don't really see him. Later on, I do see him. He's absolutely in the celebration. Then there are multiple social media accounts.
That's where I saw it.
That are analyzing the video, now admitting, yes, he was a part of the celebration, but he didn't celebrate enough.
Like, reluctantly celebrate.
Yeah.
In an awkward high five with Pete Alonso at the plate.
Right.
Just weird. Then he's gone, and he finds his way back in. Oh, there he is. No, that's not him.
Right.
He was just making nonsense out of nothing.
I agree. We have to accept that he's a Met. He celebrated. When did we ever analyze how much a guy celebrates?
Yes.
Is that like a first thing?
We shouldn't at all after the whole Edwin Diaz thing from the WBC.
You're right.
Forget the celebration.
You're right.
Just don't touch him before he touches his home plate.
Or even Kendrys Morales years ago hit a game-winning home run. He broke his leg as he was celebrating at home plate. But I think those comments that we heard on Sunday afternoon, on Easter Sunday, is proof that we're in love now. Mm. He loves us. He appreciated the standing ovation. And we got to get all this garbage out of our heads now.
You're in love, so you nitpick the little things.
Is that what
That's
it is?
That's what it is. I mean, you do it with your wife, don't you?
I never do it.
Speak for yourself.
You do it in your mind.
I do nothing.
Even if you don't take it publicly to her.
The stuff from Friday, I love the Soto Discord, but I felt like we jumped the shark on the celebration thing. That's like watching your wedding video, and you're like, why wasn't Uncle Fred dancing during that big dance? I didn't want to invite him anyway. Like, I saw your tweet about it. Was this more Mets accounts or Yankee accounts? This down.
Unless you believe that it's Yankee accounts pretending to be Met fans. Right.
Certainly on the table.
No, it was Met fans. So I got emails to the Rico from literal Met fans saying, hey, I didn't see him celebrate. To which I tried to analyze it. I didn't see him either for a while. Then I finally got the video that I put out there. It was from the Cardinal version where I'm like, oh, he's clearly celebrating. This controversy's over. I just want to put it to bed. There he is. Good night. Then it turned into, once it went from, was he even a part of the celebration, yeah, it went into, is he celebrating enough?
Right. How energetic and eager was he celebrating?
Right.
Because it looked like I could just tell, it was very matter of fact.
But you know who else is matter of fact?
Who?
Francisco Lindor.
Yeah, of course.
And last year.
I mean, it's because he's pimping at that point.
Well, but no. He said, when he hit the grand.
After he, you're talking about the walk-off.
I'm talking about all of his home runs that have been clutch over the last year. Yes.
Yeah.
Because after he hit the grand slam against Estevez, he was very calm about it. Mm-hmm. And when he was asked about it, the Mets won the series that day.
Right.
He said, job ain't done. I will not celebrate like that until we win a world championship.
That's a good point.
Lindor celebrates in a very matter-of-fact way as well.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, he just mean mugs.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. All I know is...
kind of badass, though.
Yeah, very much so. I think that's the most badass way possible. All I know is... April 20th, Easter Sunday, Soto's in love with us. Like, I've moved on from it. I don't think we need to debate it anymore. And the other thing he basically told us, Sean, is that Met fans are better than Yankee fans.
Oh, do we love Soto?
It's another fascinating way you Met fans seem to be tying into Yankees.
Today. Well, I'm just saying. Like, he said, he was surprised, because I guess you guys would have never done that for him.
Because you know why? We would have never booed him to begin with.
You booed him, Sean. I have a tweet that proves it.
I said I booed him. You have no proof. This is the same thing like the error in the hit. Who knows?
You booed him in your house?
Yeah, possibly.
No, it was at Yankee Stadium.
No, I don't. Just kidding.
Dave Lennon did a good in-depth article on it. One of the quotes that I thought was outstanding here was Ryan Stanek, because Stanek has been everywhere. He's been with the mm-hmm. Rays, with the Astros, teams that are notorious for great pitching. Let's see. Stanek said this is as good as anywhere that he's ever been. Very fortunate that ownership in the front office here believes in having all the tools at the tool belt to help you be your best. Always beneficial to have all the tools, blah, 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 blah. The gist of it, BT, and we'll read it once, you could read the whole thing once Hoff prints it out here for you. The gist of it is that it's different for each guy. So Lennon even talks about, is it Hefner? Is it the lab? Is it this? Is it that? What the Mets are doing is identifying individuals that they believe that they can maximize and catering to each individual. The analytics, maybe it's certain rest, maybe it's a certain pitch. It's all of it. It's not just a pitching lab and a magical wand of the lab, but it's everything that goes into it. And I thought it was a fascinating look into it with Lennon. Now, they're not going to give away all their secrets there, but the fact that Stanek, a guy who's been around with Houston and Tampa, saying that the Mets are as good as it's been, to me, that is very telling. And you've seen, dude, Griffin Canning had an ERA over 5 last year, was 6-13, and all of a sudden he's turned into a serviceable starter. So I thought a good look from Dave Lennon there in Newsday, getting a little bit more into detail.
I got a little something here for you. Ready? All right, so this is from the article here. Yep. So the Mets seem to have discovered a winning formula they've been able to consistently manufacture, and it's not just one ingredient. People like to point to the closely guarded secrets of the lab or the expanded analytics department or the tutelage of Coach Jeremy Hefner and his lieutenants, while what it hasn't required, surprisingly enough, is owner Steve Cohen writing big checks for pitchers anymore, blah, blah, blah. And then you get into the David Stearns, identifying people. See, it can't be just as, and there's a lot of layers here. I'm sure there's a common sense aspect. There's a biomechanics aspect. You know, and when Static talks about all the equipment, it's not as simple as, well, the Mets just have better equipment than everybody else, because that I just don't believe that that's the case. I think it's they've got great equipment, and they've identified maybe if I were to guess, I would say what they're doing is they are effectively identifying what the weakest pitch is for each pitcher, and that's why I'm talking about how it's each individually driven, and they've either tweaked it or eliminated it, and then put a higher percentage of usage rate on something that's proven more successful. So rather than going to the well, let's say a guy throws a changeup 8.9% of the time, but the batting average against is 290, which would be incredibly high, obviously. Hey, you know, why am I going to throw a pitch that they're banging around 9% of the time? No. Right. We're going to go either to 0 or 1 or 2% and then identify the slider, the sweeper, the four-seam, the two-seam, and we're going to bump up the increment that we're deleting from the bad stuff to the good stuff. And in essence, you have a new pitcher.
I said this last year and probably again in the offseason, but I'm going to say it now, and I think it's to me it's the thing that you would want the most from any team that you root for. The Mets have a very dangerous combination of finances and smarts. They have the resources to go get whatever they need or whatever they want, and they have smarts now with David Stearns running things. Now, the money doesn't necessarily pertain to the rotation because, oddly enough, or their staff, oddly enough, as Lennon points out in the article, the highest paid pitcher right now is Edwin Diaz, who's also had the highest ERA by far on the team.
Yeah.
So the Met, you know, obviously Manaea would be when he comes
Senga
back.
Senga makes decent money.
Yeah, but who'd you say?
Senga.
I think
he signed, 5 years, 75?
Right, whatever it is, but still not to the level of the, you know, Diaz right now the most, Manaea making a lot, but he's not there.
Mm.
But it's not like they're investing a lot in their rotation, and yet they have the best staff in Major League Baseball. So their bullpen is loaded, they've got versatility, where if certain guys are struggling, they could send them down. The Mets are in a great spot, but it's not just in the money that you spend in the contract for whatever pitcher.
Sure.
It's also the infrastructure that goes in. This is something that's being built up for years.
Yeah.
To where we talked about this years ago, and I'm saying, well, down in the minors, maybe you don't see it yet, but that infrastructure being built up, now you're starting to see the rewards.
Well, again, you know, I mean, I'm buying more and more into this laboratory of philosophy and application. You have to, because the results are just now, it's not a month, it's over a year and a month, and they are taking reclamation projects or spare change, if you will, and they're making them incredibly viable. You got to respect it. You have to. Now, what I find really interesting, I remember saying this to you a week or two ago, maybe a little more. Now, like, we're a year away, roughly, from now seeing blue chippers that they've drafted. Like, these are guys that were on the side of the road, maybe not with plus-plus stuff. But what about the first and the second and the third-round picks that the Mets have had now under Stearns,
four
pitchers who they clearly identified as guys that we love? We don't have to save them. We don't have to flip them. We just have to enhance what we already know that they have. Well, now you start getting, I'm not going to say you're going to have a young Dwight Gooden, but now you have the possibility to have a staff like, you know, with a Dwight and a Fernandez and a Darling and an Aguilera and those young arms that are flame-throwing with plus-plus stuff and the laboratory. That's where it could get lights out. And that's where you beat a team like the Dodgers.
BT and Sal on the fan. Louis on Staten Island. What's up, Louis?
Lou.
Hey, what's going on? I just wanted to agree with you guys. It's nice to have the feeling that they're playing great now. I just feel like they could get better. And they have some depth, and even like a Brandon Sprout and Jet Williams who are playing very well in the minor leagues. Yeah, I just feel like we could get better.
And I don't think it's just a minor. I think it's Sprout. But and thanks for the call there, Lou. I don't think that you're wrong. I think that you're right. Appreciate the call there, buddy. But I also think that there's guys on the major league roster right now who are probably nowhere near their level of production. Vientos is just looking more like Vientos, but in the first 3 weeks he was a train wreck. He's one guy.
Right, but then you think about, okay, well, is Alonso going to hit 390, whatever it is right now? He's hit, like, he'll come back down a little bit. I understand there is room to grow, which makes it encouraging because you figure, okay, well, certain things are going to even out. If it's the rotation, you know, look, I called it a bad rotation on paper going in. I trusted David Stearns, but on paper going in without Manaea, you're saying it's a bad rotation. It's not only not bad, it's been the best in baseball. Is that going to be sustainable to be the best in baseball? So let's say that levels out even a little bit.
Yep.
Now maybe the other stuff, Soto uptick or Manaea coming back can help level that out.
Nimmo, if you believe
yeah,
in it.
Yeah, exactly. But the 10 games over 500, so I can't say that they could be much better. I mean, they've only lost 7 games on the year they played 24. Like, yeah, there's room to grow. There's also room to come back down a little bit, but I think this is where the Mets are going to sit. I really do believe that they are the best team in the division. I believe they're a 100-win team. I felt that way coming into the year that they were high 90s, 100. I forget the exact prediction, but I think it went over in our over-under totals there.
Yep.
Either way, I mean, they're playing much better than anybody could have expected, and there still is, yeah, there is room to grow.
Yeah, and listen, when I say room to grow, I don't necessarily mean win at a higher rate than they're winning. I mean, right now they're almost 71%. They're tied with the Pons, best record in baseball. I know the Mets fans feeling good. Sorry, you're not going to win 80% of the time this year. Nobody is, but when I say better, what I really mean is deeper and more problematic to pitch to 1 through 9. You know, there's still some dead spots right now. And listen, you're right. I mean, if Pete winds up hitting 280 this year, I think right now Met fans are maybe 285 because he's off to such a sick start. But he's not going to hit 300. That's not going to happen.
Right.
But the threat of Pete, even when he's down and his home run prowess and the ability to do damage is still there. So you still have to pitch him carefully. Even though Juan Soto is hitting 230-something, you still got to navigate that at-bat properly. Lindor's red hot. You know, now he's jumping on first pitches. He's doing damage, hitting home runs, and now he's hitting for the right side. So the stress that the Mets' top three pitchers are putting on opposing pitchers will eventually lead to the benefit of some of the other secondary pieces like a Vientos and maybe like a Nimmo, maybe like a McNeil, maybe Acuna's actually hitting pretty well.
Right.
Maybe both catchers when Alvarez gets back. So, again, not that they're going to win more, quote-unquote, but I think they're just going to be a better lineup 1 through – or they've got a chance to be better 1 through 9.
Ryan is in Wantaque. What's up, Ryan?
Good morning, gentlemen. It's a Mets world, and we're just living in it.
You ain't kidding, man.
There's a lot of positivity, of course, and I think a lot of it stems, if we go back and rewind before the David Stearns hire, there was an exceptional change in the Mets front office with Billy Epler in play, and maybe it was contingent upon David Stearns taking the job. Remember, at the end of that season, the Mets got rid of their entire player development and analytic departments. You know, that was something probably that was structured before David Stearns would agree to the job. The Mets took a look at a lot of their minor leaguers, and they were underwhelming. And we saw the trades with Scherzer and Verlander and the minor leaguers that were brought in. You know, the Mets had a lot of misfit toys that were drafted before that. Guys that could hit, maybe not run, maybe not field, played out of position. And now you look at the Jet Williams, the Acuñas. These are ball players. These are guys that can play every facet of the game.
Well,
it was
something that
the Mets were missing for such a long period of time.
But those guys, Ryan, are minor leaguers, and thank you for the call. Jet Williams specifically. Now, I love Acuña. He's becoming one of my favorite players because of those things that you just mentioned. I mean, the guy, level swing, hits line drives, gives major league tough at-bats, electric athleticism, defensively on the base paths, all that stuff, but still got to go out there and prove it. BT, we talked about this in real time as it was happening. The Mets were doing one thing, and Cohen was learning, okay, you want money? Here you go. Give me Max Scherzer.
Yeah.
You know, go out there, give me Verlander. I'll spend the $40 million a year. I want those guys that are proven commodities. It didn't work. They realized it wasn't working. They pivoted, paid those guys to go away, brought in prospects. That was the, to me, turning point in this organization. Once they made that decision in 2003 to acknowledge and be aware of this isn't the way to do it, now, you got to give Billy Epler a little bit of credit as well because he was there leading the way at the time. But Cohen's certainly the one who's writing the check saying, okay, fine, let's pay these guys to go away, bring in some prospects, and change our thinking. And then they hire David Stearns after Epler gets himself in trouble. They hire Stearns, and now it's even on another level because Stearns is as good a president of baseball operations as you could ask.
I think there's been two shifts in philosophy. The first one was literally the day that Cohen bought the team, the shift in philosophy. The old ownership, you know, holding on to nickels like manhole covers, throwing them around, that's over. I'm gonna spend like a drunken sailor. I'm going to try to buy a championship.
Right.
He quickly learned that that's not the way to go, pivoted, bought a minor league system, and refined his approach. And now there is a really good, and that's the second pivot. Now there's a great balance of player development, the infusion of star players, Soto, and now you got to see where it goes. But you know, listen, you give Cohen credit for changing, I think, how he initially thought this thing was going
to
go.
He had to learn along the way here. And remember, and you got people like us saying, spend, fans saying, spend. Met fan wanted that for so long.
Yeah, I know.
And there is something to that. You do have to spend, but you have to spend at all levels, and it shouldn't be reckless. Remember, when the Mets signed Carlos Correa, I'm thinking this is the best thing ever. I literally called back. I just got off the overnight, but I'm calling in, or I finished up the evening shift. I called in the overnight because I couldn't believe it happened after I left the air. I'm like, this is the greatest day ever. Now, it turned out that the contract had to be voided because of the injury stuff. But at that time, Cohen still was under the mindset of, I'm going to go spend. This is the final piece. Thank goodness. So it took a little bit of luck as well. Thank goodness.
Always does.
Exactly.
Always does.
You got to be smart. You got to be lucky as well along the way. So that also helped. But that was going into the 2023 year, which things fell apart. And then realizing, okay, this is not the right way. And every time since then, when the Mets have either tried to make a big investment or make a big investment, there's one common thread. Young players, Yamamoto, Sasaki, obviously Juan Soto. Okay, we'll go to whatever the market says we'll go to, but we want the young player. The other two guys that I mentioned did not choose the Mets. Soto did choose the Mets, and it's all coming together. The infrastructure in the minor leagues, the smarts of David Stern in the direction, Cohen learning, and all the resources available to help this team with whatever they need.
I appreciate the throwback, and I really do. I don't mean this as a knock at all, but the more throwbacks we play, the fewer songs I like.
Well, BT, it is our show.
Well, that is true. As we had to reestablish a week ago in case you lost sight of that there, big boy.
No, by the way, you did mention, I don't know if it was earlier this week, you said something, you were referencing something, he's like, oh, on my show. And you did say the same thing, just without even thinking about it. Yeah, like.
Did I on this show I did it?
I don't know if
else?
You said it off the air. You might have said it on the air, but you might have said it off the air once. It was a little something that
maybe
called
I said it on purpose.
You did. But we both like that music. All right, so a couple of things. Baseball's about to get underway here. We've been talking a lot of NFL draft. Make sure you stay tuned tomorrow. Evan and Tiki will be live on draft day. Join us. Join them for a special broadcast live from the Dream Bar at the American Dream Mall ahead of day one of the NFL draft. Evan and Tiki, 2 to 6:30. Check it out, Dream Bar. We're excited about that. One thing on the baseball note, BT, before we get back to the calls on both the Jets and Giants and the draft and the excitement around that, where are you at with Lindor and a captaincy here? We've referenced this a little bit. You know, how important is it? Is it a big deal? For me, I feel like it's inevitable. And why not just make Lindor the captain now? I don't know if it would interrupt the flow of the season at all, but he's clearly the leader, both on the field, off the field, by example. There isn't anything Lindor hasn't done. He's got the perfect relationship with the Met fan. He's been clutch in the postseason. He's been clutch in big moments, hitting big home runs. It's right now as good as their relationship has ever been. He clearly is the leader of this team. I know Nimmo's a leader, and Alonso maybe, you know, the way he's played this year and establishing himself to a certain extent. But Lindor's got to be the guy. I would make him a captain. I don't know when the right timing is for that, but I do think Francisco Lindor should be the captain of the Mets.
It's his team. I mean, I think he's already thought to be the captain. I remember 2 years ago seeing videos, even when I was criticizing, you know, his inability to hit early or maybe not being quite the player that I thought he was going to be when they got him from the Guardians. But I always praised him for, you know, going out there with Vientos and doing defensive work. I remember seeing him down in Port St. Lucie, like in mid-February or even early February with some of the young players really trying to show them the ropes of how to be a pro. So there's no doubt that he's the captain. He just doesn't quite have that symbolic C. When do you do it? You know, I don't know that there's ever really a perfect time. I didn't really like the way the Yankees did it with Jeter back in the day. They stuffed it into the middle of the season. If you remember the details around that was actually in Cincinnati.
No, I don't remember.
Yeah, that was in. They weren't playing particular. Maybe it was a diversion to get the Wolves off the piece of meat there. Yankee fans maybe not happy, but it was very oddly thrown in there. Why the hell are you doing it in Cincinnati? That was odd. I think if you're going to do it, and they should, maybe you do it down at Port St. Lucie before the season starts.
Right.
But I don't know if it was you or Hoff, and I don't want to steal this. I want to give you a chance to say it. One of you guys, I don't know how serious you were, one of you guys threw out something in the meeting today about maybe the perfect time to do it is, do you remember?
Hoff said that. No, it was Hoff who said that.
Hoff, go ahead. Take, I don't want to steal your thunder here. Hoff, go ahead. Take a little glory.
No,
take
I just thought that, you know, hey, perfect timing. David Wright's going to come here in July 19th, and he's going to number's going to be retired. That's a perfect time to pass the torch to Francisco Lindor.
The symbolism is strong. Is it a little too WWE-y, if you will?
Yeah, I don't like it because then you take it away from David Wright. I'm not saying I'm opposed to the idea in general. I wouldn't need to do it the weekend of David Wright or after that. I don't know when the right time is to do it. And I don't know if you necessarily need to, you know, have somebody that is a captain, you know, when you know that he is the captain of this team anyway without having that C on his chest. I'm sure it'd be something he would appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
It's something he has earned. This is not without merit.
Yeah.
So I'm
and he's going to be here for a while.
Yeah, I'm all for it. It's, you know, the Mets are in the midst now of, this is really the beginning. Last year was the beginning of it, but this is now, okay, this is the sustained run that we're hoping for, potentially being in the midst of it. The fans have been great. The team has been great. They've got the superstars. Everything is in place. So why not just put the cherry on top, name him the captain, and away we go. The Knicks did it in the offseason with Brunson.
Yes, that was definitely offseason.
I do feel like it's a spring training thing more than it is an in-season thing.
Yeah, I mean, again, I just referenced the Yankees. Yeah. That was oddly stuffed in there. I don't know how they named, you know, Mattingly captain, I don't remember, or even Guidry and Randolph or Thurman. Was that bestowed upon him down in spring? I don't know.
Judge, obviously. Yeah,
well, Judge, of course, but that was different. That was... I think any way you do it, I think Lindor will be gracious. I think he's already the cat. I just hope he doesn't wear the C like Keith did. I always thought that was a little corny. Don't put the C on the jersey.
Really? I like that.
You like Keith when Keith did that?
I mean, it.
Gary did it too, right?
As a kid, I don't recall that. I remember Keith having the C on there. As a kid, I thought it stood out.
It did, you know, but it didn't stand out. I don't know. I didn't like it.
You only like it in hockey with the captains on there?
Yeah. Listen, if Judge did it, I wouldn't like it. I don't like it in baseball.
Then, all right, so if you're not going to put it on the jersey, then really what are we doing? I mean, just letting everybody else know.
It's symbolism. It's the...
Now, do you think that...
Public identification.
Do you think... Officially?
Yeah,
Because public right now, even though we can acknowledge Nimmo as being a leader of this team, and I do think Brandon Nimmo is a leader of this team, his play on the field has not warranted him... being named a captain.
Captain?
Well, I'm just saying, no, of the two leaders on this team, I think there are two clear guys. It's Lindor and Brandon Nimmo.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Brandon Nimmo, but as far as the caliber of player that they are, it's not even close. Lindor has blown by him. Lindor was an MVP candidate a year ago. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. Nimmo has yet to be an all-star with the Mets, so he's got a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But you do wonder, or at least I do wonder, if they did name Lindor a captain, would that impact Nimmo or potentially others in a negative way at all?
Okay. I don't think it would impact Pete. Let me start with a couple of the big ones here. I think Pete is fairly obtuse to all that stuff. Now, I don't mean contract stuff. He didn't handle that well, and I understand that's different. The other stuff, like the clicks or the head, I don't think Pete cares. He's just old school, country strong. Let me hit my bombs and keep it moving. I don't think Juan Soto would care. I don't think Juan Soto really wants to be a captain.
Right.
I don't think he craves that.
Yeah.
And there's nobody else outside of Nimmo that would even be in the conversation. And no, I don't think it would negatively impact anybody.
Nimmo would be probably the one.
Yeah, but this is where I'm going to give him a lot of credit. Anytime we talk about Nimmo, I always preface it with, I really like Nimmo. I just don't think he's nearly as good as some other people do. And I'm going to stand by that.
Been here the longest,
drafted by the Mets. Yep. I get a first round pick, understood. And last night was very much a captain's actions when the matchup would say, hey, put lefty-righty up here. Instead, we're not going to substitute Nimmo, and we're going to get a big knock from our catcher who's scuffling a little bit here. And you saw Nimmo's reaction, which was awesome from the top step, really enjoying the moment and happy for somebody other than himself. That's very captain-like. So I don't think anything that you were to do with Lindor would adversely impact Nimmo at all. By the way, it might help him. He's hitting 203. I mean, it might wake him up.
Another six-game winning streak.
What?
10 games over 500.
What?
Tied for the best winning percentage in baseball.
What?
They've already taken 2 out of 3 in this series from the Phillies. We'll see if they could sweep today. And Griffin Canning, amongst other guys that have been tomato cans in their careers, coming here, getting into the pitching lab, and getting it done. It's been incredible to watch. And I know it's early, but Hell, if they were 7-17, we'd be talking about how terrible they were. This is an awesome start, and it doesn't feel like it's slowing down anytime soon. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
I'm great, man. As a Met fan, I'm just taking it all in. I mean, when you start listing some of those statistics, their records, their winning streaks, I'm like, I just want to sit here and enjoy this. This doesn't happen very often for our team, and hasn't happened very often for our team. And I concur. This pitching staff has done an amazing job. Griffin Canning got himself in and out of trouble last night, you know, handled it professionally. And I was looking at Carlos Mendoza as the game was going on. I'm wondering how long are they going to keep him out there? And I think part of it is, okay, we don't want to overuse the bullpen, but we also want to see if the young man can get himself through some tough spots. I think there's a little bit of tough love going there, but I don't know, man. It's like we are in a really weird spot. I mean, like, we don't often have opportunities to really feel this way about our team. We always look at it from the perspective of somebody else. And I always say this. Why can't our team get off to a great start?
Yeah.
Just once.
Right. I know. I agree. And not have it be so hard all the time. And I know there's many months to go, but the fact that, you know, right now they have a better record than the Dodgers, and they're facing the Phillies, who could be their stiffest competition in division. We'll see if the Braves ever wake up for real. But they beat them a couple of times already. They beat them in the postseason last year. It feels like they've got their number right now, but it is, there's an expectation of winning. And I reference this moment a lot, but I think it's very important. It was after the Phillies playoff series where the Mets won. It was a champagne celebration. Steve Cohen said, I want to change the negative perception of the Met fan. And that is happening right now every day. When you put on SNY, you expect them to win.
Yes, I would agree. And the other part of all of this is that, you know, in the beginning, you said, I know it's early. Now, we normally say that when they're off to a bad start.
Yeah.
I am not saying that. I am not saying it's early. I am saying I am taking in every single pitch. I am taking in every single game, and I'm taking in every single moment, because this is a extension of what happened at the end of last year.
Yeah.
This time last year, it was miserable. And we had already started talking about trading Pete Alonso. And we were only in April, and they got off that horrendous start. So I'm not talking about it's early. I'm talking about stacking wins, stacking series wins, winning at home, dominating at home, having 35,000 to 38,000 to 44,000 fans at home in every game, and the fans buying into it. And that's, as a Met fan, I have to say, and many of the players have said, the fans are a big part of this, because now they're coming out in droves and they're seeing a winner and they're expecting to win no matter who is on the mound. It's not like we're throwing Jacob DeGrom out there or Matt Harvey in his prime. We're throwing out guys by the name of Griffin Canning, Tylor McGill, a group of relievers that have done an unbelievable job thus far this season. I don't know, man. I don't care how early it is. I'm just enjoying it. And I think it's fantastic. And I think that Steve Cohen and David Stearns, at this point, given what happened last year and what's happening right now, deserve a lot of credit for where we sit as Met fans.
Yeah, and Pete continues to stay hot. It is amazing the confidence that he has in the box. I mean, it's just, if you go and take a look at any at-bat, just pick any at-bat out last year, and just his demeanor at the plate as opposed to his demeanor now, it is a 180. And the game is mental. It's one of those things. We all knew he had the talent last year. It wasn't happening. He feels like he's back to being himself, and he's another guy now. Last year, I was expecting him to strike out, grounded to a double play, you know, fly out to center field every time he got up there. Now I'm expecting a home run or a double. It's been so much fun. Now, you know, we'll see what happens with his contract at the end of the year, but I'll tell you right now, he is carried this team offensively. Lindor has woken up, but Pete Alonso has carried this team offensively. And by the way, the Mets starting pitching staff they've got the best ERA in baseball, and they're doing it without Manaea and without Montas, who we'll see what he ends up being. But those were going to be two guys that were locked in the starting five this year. They're both out, and they still have the best ERA in baseball. If every single person, and I don't blame them, every single person breaking down the Mets and breaking down the National League East said the Mets' weakness is a starting pitching. It's a starting pitching. It's a starting pitching. It's been the best in the game.
Yes, it has been. And I'm enjoying it, man. I'm enjoying every minute of it. And we all should be sitting back and enjoying this. And the happy feeling that your team is going to win every time they step on the field is really, I mean, it's a foreign feeling, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe from at the end of last year when they were on that run and Lindor was carrying the team and Jose Iglesias was a big part of it and the OMG stuff and all the things that were going on like in August and September. I mean, it's carried over to this season. And I think a lot of it, for me anyway, a lot of it has to do with Juan Soto. Even though his numbers are pedestrian, to say the least, given what he's being paid, he will heat up. Eventually, he will heat up and he will be the one that will be carrying the team because it's too long of a season for him not to. And I just think that his presence around this team has definitely had a positive effect, regardless of what the numbers tell you. I'm just telling you, I see a competitive guy every time he steps in the box, and I think that that really has had a cascading effect on everybody else in the lineup. So,
yeah,
it's all good, and even him, and even he's only been average.
Right, which is another one of those things you can say that, you know, the team could even get better. You know, we talk so much about, you know, the Mets getting Juan Soto. Juan Soto got the Mets, too. You know, Juan Soto came here and joined the team at the perfect time. They, after turning around last year, and I know it's not the exact same team, but the core is still here. You're joining a team that believed and wants to win and cares about winning every single game. And that's why the fan base, you know, packing out Citi Field early on in the season, I think, is so important. Like, you can't have those mental lapses when there's 35,000 people in an April game. You can't, because they're there, they're rooting for you, they got your back. Like, it feels like a way more important game than one of 162 in April.
If I had one minor nitpick.
Okay, you're allowed.
It's a minor nitpick.
You're allowed.
And I think hopefully he's going to be a really good player for the Mets. Is that sometimes I think Luis Acuña Jr. is not really sure what's going on the baseball field.
Yeah, a little helter-skelter. Like,
I'm not really sure if he knows where he's going, where he's supposed to go, when to run, when not to run on the base paths, where to cover, where to go when you're a second baseman. Sometimes he's like floating around out there.
Yeah.
And he's not really sure. And it's so hard for me to believe. And I know that Gary sometimes when they're doing the games, and even and Keith every now and again will be like flabbergasted that they're not sure what he is doing at second base.
Yeah, it's awareness, not exactly a 10 for him.
I mean, you played baseball your whole life.
Yeah,
you're
don't know.
You're a second baseman your whole goddamn life.
But he's also been...
You got to know where you're going.
Yeah, true.
I mean, is it that hard?
For some guys, you know, I mean, he's been getting away with being as talented as anybody for a long time, and he's got to focus.
But he's got to wake up.
The focus thing.
I'm hoping that Carlos Mendoza and these... And I hope they're taking him aside. And saying, like, you just can't be floating around out there like a butterfly.
Yeah, like you used to say to us, dancing with the fairies.
Yeah, well, what are we doing out there? Yeah. I mean, you're like the kid out in right field picking his nose.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that. Get your finger out of your nose and let's go. Let's get our heads out of our ass and let's figure out what we're doing.
Yeah.
But again, that comes back to coaching. That comes back to managing. It comes back to sitting the young man down, going over videotape with him and making him realize the mistakes that he has made from time to time that... Both Gary, and to their credit, and Keith and Ronnie, actually all three of them, have pointed out, and it is a little bit of a nitpick, and I know everybody wants him to be great, but he also has to, he can't be, you know, like, dancing with the fairies. I mean, like, he's sometimes just out there, and I feel like there's, like, little butterflies flying around his head. Like, and
he's got to lock in.
He's not aware of what's going on.
Yeah, he's got to lock in, and Francisco Lindor basically said as much about him and in games. Now, these are regular season games up at the big leagues, so there's no excuse. Not a spring training game. It's not a minor league game. So he's got to get that out of his game. And, you know, someone that is heating up, Mark Vientos, getting very close to his potential offensively, which is something that I've been waiting for this entire month. So that is another positive. And you get that guy hitting the way he's supposed to hit. The lineup is
lethal. Again, like, you know, you're gonna have stops and starts throughout the lineup.
But there's a sophomore slump thing. So the reason why, like, I don't get as worried about guys like Lindor or Soto, but, like, you know, Pete Alonso, you maybe were a little bit more worried about coming into the year because of what happened last year. There's all circumstances around other guys. Sophomore slump is a thing.
I know it's a thing. I mean, and, you know, when I think of Pete Alonso, I think of Chris Kreider and the Rangers.
Yeah.
Homegrown talent.
That's right.
Didn't have a great year. Has moments in the playoffs. Was a little bit injured this year, and that's why I want the Rangers to keep him. You know, I want the Rangers to keep their homegrown talent and somebody that's had a great 13-year career but had an off year this year. You know, it happens. You know, people go, you know, and have off years for whatever reason, whether it be injuries or different situations that they're involved in around the team and all that has happened with different teams. And I think Pete was a little bit of that last year, but look at what he's doing this year. I mean, there was a chance that he was not going to be on this team. And quite frankly, you know, we talked about the impact that Soto was going to have, and he is one that has been a direct positive result to Soto's, you know, it being in the lineup, being here, being a part of the team. And you can feel like, you know, when you win, the team looks like it does. It looks like it's happy with each other. They all get along, and that's exactly what winning does. That's the elixir that cures any internal strife or any of the other crap, because nobody wants to be the reason why you lose. That's where the Mets are right now, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, which is amazing.
So many guys clicking, I mean, on all phases, you know, offense and starting pitching and bullpen, and you don't want to be the weak link in that. I mean, you feed off that in a positive way. You feed off that in a negative way, too. When things are going bad, you know, that is contagious as well. So it has been great. Now, we talk about the Pete thing. I've said it many times already. I know the reasons why you don't, you know, get wrapped up in what's going on right now and talk contracts and all of that thing. But, I mean, if it were me, and I'm a fan, and I'm not David Stearns, and I'm not ruthless, I'd find a way to be like, all right, Pete, tacking four more years onto this thing
just
right now.
Relax.
I'm tacking four more this years
just,
onto
just,
this thing.
Just relax.
We're taking care of you, man.
Take it easy.
We're taking care. We're going to do I want polar bear bobbleheads for the next 5 years.
I know you do.
That's what I'd like to see.
If you're David Stearns, you just got to take it one game at a time. Just let the whole thing play itself out. And let's hope that, you know, the Mets have two or three guys that are in the MVP running. Let's just hope it. And let's hope Pete is one of those guys and he continues doing what he's doing. I'm happy as hell for him because, you know, this is a money year for him without question. And thus far, he's been answering almost every single question.
Yeah, he has.
And by the way, his play at first base has been really good.
Yeah, I mean, he picked one last night that was really impressive. And I mean, that's one of those things that he got labeled as early on in his career, and he wasn't great, but now, I mean, I think he's above average. I think he's above average.
Runs above average? What the hell is that thing?
No, that's wins above replacement, whatever you're talking about.
What's runs above average?
I don't know what that is, but
I don't know. That sounded like something that was important.
No. But I believe he's above average defensively at first base, and I think that's an unfair thing.
Unfair, of course he is. Yes, he is. I mean, you know, we've seen it for the last three or four years. He's gotten better each and every year defensively. So I don't know what to tell you.
Well, what I mean, yeah, I'm agreeing with you. I don't know. You're doing this. I don't know what to tell you thing. Like I'm disagreeing with you.
No, I know you're not disagreeing with me, but that whole runs above average thing.
I didn't say that.
No, I said that.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm not even sure that's a thing.
That's not a thing. Runs above average is not a thing.
Yeah, it's raw.
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 I mean, listen, he's leading the league and rah.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo coming to you live from the Bill Ford Tough Studio on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Mets in the midst of another winning streak. Looks great at Citi Field. And, you know, this is the Juan Soto effect as well. It's not just him. I mean, it's the magic of the season last year and the way that they picked up speed, steam into the NLCS, and then, of course, the offseason and getting Juan Soto. But this is exactly what the fan base wanted, was a team that was relevant, a team that could go out and get the biggest free agent, and a team that's winning early on in the season. It feels the exact opposite of last year at this time. And it is, I mean, anybody wants to talk about, you know, Juan Soto and maybe not worth it or this or that, it's a long way to go, but look up in the stands in April. you know, before school is out on crappy weather days, and it looks like a late season, regular season game where, you know, they're fighting for a playoff berth.
I was just thinking about Friday night and the Lindor walk-off. And I was just, you know, I'm sitting there laying in bed sick as a dog.
Yeah.
And I'm going, man, this is exactly what Steve Cohen had to envision. That somehow, some way, you'd have a Friday night game. Lindor would have a walk-off and the place would go bananas. And, you know, that's part of the bigger plan here. Like, we tend to focus on the Mets and whether or not they're going to make it to the World Series. But the bigger plan is the whole development around Citi Field. That's the bigger plan. And the more nights like that, the more series like that against the Cardinals, beating the Phillies last night, you know, and everybody participating. You know, Nimmo has a big hit the other night. Soto has a big hit the other night. Lindor's going off now. Jesse Winker hits a home run. Pete Alonso has been hot. You know, they'll start coming around, and everybody will start having a piece of this. And the pitching has been great. And for the first time, you know, this year, Kranich got in a little trouble last night.
Yep.
But that's okay. It's going to happen. You know, not everybody's going to be on their game every time they step out on the field. But to be 10-1 at home right now, it couldn't have gone any better for Steve Cohen and what I think he's envisioning for not just his own baseball team, but for that whole entire area over there. There's so much positivity that is surrounding him. He'll have the political will. He'll get everything that he's going to need, and he's going to continue to build this team. So he's a smart businessman, and I really felt that this weekend. And last night was a continuation of that.
Well, that's what I think makes it even more impressive because, okay, weekends easier for people to get out there. Most people, if you got a Monday through Friday job, and then Monday it continues. You know, and the weather was not great yesterday. It's going to be warming up today, but it wasn't great yesterday. And I know it's the Phillies, too, and that's a great opponent coming in. You hate them. But, I mean, I'd love to look back at the attendance. I probably could do that from last year to this year on, the same type of day. A Monday in April with whoever was in. I mean, I guarantee it's 10, 15, 20,000
better. They got swept by Milwaukee last year in the first opening series.
Yeah.
So they got off to a horrendous start, and Lindor got off to his normal horrendous start. But the nice thing about Francisco is that now finally that start, he's gotten off to now a much better start earlier, let's put it that way, than he did last year.
Yeah, and the pitching has been incredible. I mean, each one of these guys is exceeding expectations again. I mean, the fact Tylor Megill with the 10 strikeouts. You had Clay Holmes striking out guys left and right. You know, obviously, you know, Griffin Canning missed the one start, but then with illness came back, pitched well. I mean, this pitching lab thing is amazing. And you don't have Manaea back. Senga looks better than he's ever looked. Got more velocity. I mean, it's what David Stearns has done in, you know, last year and then early returns this year of finding the right guys, getting them here, working on them with Jeremy Hefner and all the other pitching gurus that they have. I mean, this is if this is the formula every year, then hell. I know it's not going to come up aces every single year. We already saw the Frankie Montas injury, but this is just incredible that these guys that we all looked at as mid pitchers now are just humming along every single night.
This is the complete opposite of last year. I mean, this is
early on, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and hopefully it will continue, and I don't see why it wouldn't. I mean, just listening to Jesse Winker after the game yesterday talking about the fan base and the electricity and how going to the game under those circumstances has got to be, they got to be jacked for that. It's like, you know, when the Knicks go to the Garden, it's always sold out. The Rangers always sold out. I mean, you know, going to play at home in front of sellouts or at least, you know, 95% of the stadium is full for at least a baseball team in April.
Yeah, unheard of.
Only the Yankees do that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the Red Sox do that too for a certain amount. But
yeah, Phillies are pretty good with attendance. But I mean, the Mets weren't in recent memory. They were even talking about it last year towards the end of the year that, you know, where are you guys? I expected more. Even Steve Cohen, I think, posted about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's got them now. Yeah. He's definitely got them now, and the team's got them. And to the credit of the baseball players, those guys have all had, like, think about all their moments that they've already had. Like, each individual guy has already had, like, a major moment. So that's a good thing. It's being spread around. And, you know, and Juan Soto hasn't even really heated up yet.
Nope.
That's the thing. I mean, and he'll believe me, he'll go off. He's a competitive hitter, and you can see it. And there's no question that the Juan Soto effect is in effect.
Let's go to Zach in Massapequa. What's going on, Zach?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Love the show. A lot of people, I mean, Max Kranich, yeah, he had a bad inning, but he did come out for the third. That was his third inning coming out, and he typically doesn't do that. So I'm not really that disappointed in him. I think last night was really just about what a great team win that was. I mean, things weren't pretty at the end, but Diaz was able to rally. Diaz was able to do what he always does, and he got out of trouble. So, it was a great win from the Mets. Lindor showing that April, he's kind of overcame what used to be. And as a Mets fan, I can't be nothing but excited.
You're right. I mean, listen, they had a 5-0 lead. That's why Diaz doesn't show up, and that's why they try to sneak a third inning there by Kranich.
Yep.
And instead, if you have a 3-0 lead, guess who's in there?
Well, yeah, Edwin Diaz. Yes. Yeah, for sure. And it's amazing how bad Aaron Nola has been this year, and Lindor jumps all over him. And I think he hasn't won a game. I know it's not all about wins and losses, but I think he's 0-5 at this point now, Nola. So love to see anything like that happening with the Phillies, guys that they're counting on going down the tubes. And as long as the Braves continue to struggle a little bit, it's going to be a two-team race until they decide to get back
in. Just whatever you do, just keep stacking wins, man. Just keep your head down, keep stacking wins, and just keep doing the way you're doing it. There's something magical happening at Citi Field right now, and they're living it, and they've all been a part of it. I mean, it's not like, and I know Pete Alonso has, been a big part of it, but they all, at least at home, have all started to have a piece of it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And that was this team last year. They were led by Francisco Lindor in the second half, but they all had a piece of it.
Every single one of them.
Every single one of them. And that was the whole Jose Iglesias thing. Uh-huh. And, I don't think we need Grimace this year.
No, doesn't seem like it. I mean, if another gimmick works for them, then we'll embrace it because Mets fans love their gimmicks.
Yeah, we love gimmicks, that's for sure. But you know what? What we love better? We love just sound, solid baseball.
Yeah, and being in first place and winning the NL East. That'd be nice. Wouldn't that be great?
Living up to expectations.
Yeah, no, which are very, very high.